Good afternoon, everybody. This is Alexandra Metters of GalacticConnection.com. Today is September 24th, 2013, and I have a very interesting guest with me today, Jill Mattson, and her website is JillsWingsOfFlight.com. She is a very advanced soul, I can tell just by looking at her book, an author, a musician, a composer in the field of sound healing, and has a great deal of information to disseminate about its impact on our spiritual, mental, and psychic growth. This is so perfect for the avenue of my sight. And Jill, I welcome you today. I cannot wait to get into some of the questions I have.
So, I'm so excited to be here. We're going to have such fun.
I know. I'm jazzed to finally have hooked up with you after all this time that we've been exchanging emails. So tell me a little bit about how you even got into the field of sound healing. I mean, I was fascinated that you did a lot of digging into secret societies and things like that. Tell me, how did this all come about?
Well, it was about 25 years ago, and my middle son won a contest, and he got to go see Bill Gates. And as an eight-year-old, that was so unimpressive to him. But anyway, it was a big deal.
Oh, that's
yeah,
cute.
He just wanted his turkey sandwich, you know, Bill who? But anyway.
Don't you love it?
So anyway, he had to write this essay in school. It was Imagine the Magic of a Computer. And I had just had a baby, and the baby was kind of difficult. And he and his brother watched the baby when I did the dishes, and they didn't like that. So his essay was to have a computer and have a hologram of the mother outside of the computer. So you could fake off little baby brothers, bong them in the playpen, and good little boys could go off and play computer games. Anyway, got all this attention. And at this time, I was very serious about Christianity. And not that I'm not now, but I have a whole different take on it now. But anyway, I took his idea, and I started to write the Bible like an autobiography, thinking that it would look different from God's point of view than ours. Like, if there's enough food on the earth to feed the earth three times over, we might say, how would God let a child starve? God might say, pigs. They don't share, you know? So anyway, I started on this quest, and it ended up being, for me, it was a spiritual quest. And as I went through, I got very upset with the Old Testament. God had, he was cranky, got PMS, he was jealous, and he was kind of small for me, in my idea of a God who's supposed to be loving. So anyway, I went to an epiphany, and the epiphany was that if my God's love, and if I see anything anywhere otherwise, I'm rejecting it. And I was like psychic on a dime, and my world changed. I saw visions, I heard things, crazy messages, flying shows I would see in the ethers. I mean, it was just tremendous.
Wow.
And then I went on this quest, and I started with other versions of the Bible, because I put a lot of time in this, and I had a hard time realizing that this was just for me, not for anybody else. So I went for other Bibles, and I ended up with the Torah and the Jewish Kabbalists. And then from there, I was fascinated with that. We went into Samaria and the ancient Babylonian stuff, which would have been one of the first great civilizations after the fall of Atlantis, prior to Egypt.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Yeah. And there I went to China and Egypt, and anytime I found anything about music, I don't know, I just think I looked like a porcupine. I mean, the hair would just stand up on end, and I just feel great. So I wrote it down, and, you know, 25 years later, I've got like 3 feet of information.
Wow. My God.
And the thing what I found was that the thing about sound was important in every mystery school, from the Tibetan monk to Lao Tzu to Buddha to Jesus. But they were very careful about it, because sound is like not a respecter of persons, to quote a Christian adage, but sound can be used for evil. Sound can be used to kill, maim, control. And so the information was only given to people who had already proven trustworthy. Therefore, you had to be an adept or probably a master, and the information was transmitted verbally, and when the sect died out, so did the information.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's like each little mystery school, and there was, you know, maybe hundreds over the globe, over 5,000-year period, they would give you, like, teasers, you know, like the Rosicrucians would give you this, and the Office of Zeta would give you that, and, I am a geek of all geeks. And I just read. And I gathered all the tidbits from all over the globe from all these thousands of years. And it gave me a picture of how vibrations alter your consciousness, your thinking, your connections to stars, to galaxies, to other beings, how it alters your liver, your big toe, your mood, whether you're angry or not, who you happen to like and some of your friends and relationships.
You know, you made a good point here, which is the vibrations. Now, we talk a lot about vibrations in the spiritual community, but really, what are they? What do they look like? Where do they come from?
Well, I like sound because sound is kind of like, think of yourself in a submarine and you can't see out the window, so you put up a little pipe that has like a window in it and you can see all the ocean around you. That's what sound is. Sound, of course, is vibrations, but it's not the whole spectrum of vibrations. It's just like a little peek hole, kind of like with that submarine example. It's like a window to see it all. But the thing about understanding sound and music is that you can watch it and see repeatable behavior, see how sound waves interact, combine, make energy, kill energy, transfer energy, change, create and alter. And then you can take that knowledge and then compare it to thoughts, which is another octave, a musical octave, a span of tones of vibrations. Or your feelings, it's just another group, another octave of vibrations, or your psychic abilities.
God, that's really interesting. I never saw it that way. So, I mean, you were talking about the secret societies. When did we as a society start, when did we start moving away from sound healing?
We have been moving away from sound healing, from what I can tell, since the beginning of life on Earth. Because I believe, this would not be fact, this would be my belief, so take caution here and make your own mind up, but I believe that God is sound. He's all sound. He's all vibration. That's what the Big Bang is. It's a big vibration. And when the first beings, from reading from antiquity, and plus Channing, but there's a tremendous amount of stuff coming out on Lemuria and Atlantis from Central America, with the different Indian translations of their documents. And you're finding that these earlier beings were thinner, more ghost-like. I don't know, like a Casper the Friendly Ghost, but but they were definitely more connected, more spiritual, less embedded in duality, less physical, less solid. And as they lost the connections to the vibratory patterns, said differently, same thing, as they lost the music of the spheres, as they lost the ability to tap into this information, which is energy, which is vibrations, they became more embedded in matter. They became more solid and more immersed in duality. To me, you know, I'm an incurable Pollyanna, so bear with me. I always have to find something good in everything, how annoying that may be. So as we get further and further away from God, and we get more thick, heavy, and in duality, we also learn skills of independence. And we learn skills of decision-making and responsibility, because we perceive we're separate. I don't perceive you and me as the same thing. We're separate people. When in reality, we're exchanging vibrations and energy right now. Just because we can't see it, we don't believe it, but we are. And so when we have that view of separation, we develop as an individual. And I think it was when we evolved back to God, we take that with us. it's almost like I just love life. It's like I think of all these children's stories, and they're like stories of how the earth developed, like the Pied Piper, how the music drew the children away. And in many, well, no, not in many ways, the cultures of the music throughout the ages formed the thinking patterns. They entrained the thoughts and feelings in the people, which had a tremendous amount to do with the actions and the achievements of each great culture. And so as the music evolved and people became more immersed in duality, we also became less group-oriented. We didn't need the group to survive.
The tribal kind of mentality.
Right. Yeah. And so now as we evolve, I think the good thing in all that was that we've learned children. It's like we're children of God and we're growing up.
You know, you talked
about...
And
when we evolve, we take that with us.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the other thing about separation from God, source, whatever you want to call it, I think one of the biggest things that we're learning right now, especially in the move within the spiritual community today, is the fact that we have gone through a severe boot camp. And
yeah.
we are really being called to become far more galactic. It's not even planetary. And realize
mm-hmm.
that the unification of ourselves, the solar system, the universe, whatever, galaxy, wherever you want to take it, however far, we almost have a calling to share that information with beings that the masses never even thought existed, and
yeah.
with life that we never even recognized was around. And here
mm-hmm.
we are in an amazing, very special, unique, rewarded situation once we get to that place where we're sharing how did we cope with the separation from source. It's one of the most incredible gifts. I mean, we should all, as much as we go crazy with a lot of the 3D mundane, we should pull back and say, wow, we are so gifted, because look how many people are being born every day that are just ravenous to be here.
Yeah. And two things with that, with that separation, again, I see everything in terms of music. But as we went throughout the ages, it's like there was different predominant frequencies as we separated from God. So at first, we might radiate the primary frequency. If you were to average the frequency of all the thoughts, feelings of all the people, you can get an average frequency, which is a frequency is always transfers energy through resonance. It's a scientific phenomena. Can't not happen. And so that's how music or sound makes you feel. And so if you have a predominant vibration or a predominant music, there's interchange between feeling and the sound. So your early civilizations, as for departing from God, would be like in the key of C, and then you would learn survival and different types of issues associated with that vibration, that ray. Like the Ascended Masters talk about the rays, Saint Germain of the Violet Ray, meaning that there's energy exchange between transmutation and purity. And that's the lesson of the Violet Age. And so one way that we learn separation from God is vibrating to different tuning pitches.
Interesting.
And then the second thing I wanted to say, I know it's just off on your comment, you were talking about how we could connect to galactic beings, and not just planetary, but galactic. The ancient people were doing that.
Yes.
Their ancient languages of light was actual energy. It was not symbolic. Like right now we say book, and we don't think that the word book is the same as book. It just means book.
Mm-hmm.
But in ancient times, like they'd throw sand on a drum or a gong, and then they'd make noise underneath to vibrate it. So it would go out and it would form patterns. That would be the signature for the word gong. And if it made a recognizable pattern, like it made a dragonfly, it's the word for dragonfly. So in other words, the languages of light was what it represented. It's like the, you know, it's the oral form of the energy. And the ancient languages of light were each tying into different star seeds. in our different vibratory patterns.
Well, you also said something about the ages that we've been through, like the Dark Ages, the Renaissance, things like that. So are you also finding in your research that each one of those eras, so to speak, of society was equivalent to a mass consciousness tone?
Absolutely. And
Wow,
it's
that's very interesting.
and time is getting faster because it used to be the civilizations were much longer and they're getting closer and closer together. And one of the Dark Ages, one of the fascinating things with music, and in one of my CDs I have these beautiful frequency patterns. But anyway, ancient times always tuned to heaven and earth. I just think this is so beautiful. They would see nature in terms of trying to come up with its vibration. And how did ancient man, without our technology, know what the vibration of a tree is, for example? So they'd look at it, and they'd see the patterns, and they'd measure them. And here's your sacred geometry. They would measure what did God choose when he made this earth, or what did Mother Nature choose? And then they'd do geometry, come down to numbers, convert it to cycles per second or sound. So music's no, it's not entertainment. That would be to rob people of beautiful gifts. Music is tuning to heaven and earth. It's being one with God and one with earth. And they did it through their music. Now, that's called the Fibonacci numbers, but it's also the Fibonacci music, which has been gone for since the Renaissance, and I'll get into this really cool story. But anyway, so I put that in my Paint Your Soul. And then they would also have different tonal matrices that would, again, help your ascension. I put that in that CD as well. But anyway, then at the end of the Greek civilization, prior to the Dark Ages that you mentioned, the competition for the Catholic Church then would be the ancient Sumerians, which was very powerful stuff. We just don't know of a lot of it because it's so old. And the ancient Egyptians and the ancient Greeks. All three did this musical practice. And in between the different Fibonacci numbers or these spiraling patterns that they found in nature was the interval of phi, which that vibration is an irrational number. And Mother Nature doesn't do rounding off, and she combines frequencies, and when she combines frequencies, they create an irrational number. It goes on forever, and it creates a curve in a physical form. So anyway,
wow.
They had all these, their sacred geometry is because it matches God, it matches nature, it matches things. That's what sacred geometry is.
I was just going to ask you, what was the important component of mathematics, and you answered it. You know, it's like, why is math such a significant part of sound healing?
Oh, it is. It is because the language of the body is math. That's why.
Oh my God.
But anyway, back to my story.
Wow.
Back to my story. The Middle Ages. Okay, so the Catholic Church sees this competition, and they ban phi. It's called music diabolus. So you can go to jail for playing this number or this for echoing nature. And they ban the theory of harmonics and how sound healing is done. So you were asking me earlier, isn't this funny how this dovetails?
God.
How we lost sound healing because the Catholic Church outlawed it and they won in, you know, the fight over the, which religion took hold.
When was
and
that?
It wasn't
when was that, Jill?
The Dark Ages.
Dark Ages.
Isn't
okay.
it funny? They ban this sacred music, and what happens but the Dark Ages?
Yeah, and it's called the Dark Ages.
For a good reason.
Very interesting.
And this is cool. This is cool too. But the emergence of that would be in Germany, where Martin Luther broke the back of the Catholic Church. And at that time, those people who were into Lutheran, no longer had to follow the dictates of the church. And that birthed Bach, Mendelssohn, all those, Wagner, all those early, they're all German. They're allowed to do it because of Luther.
Oh my gosh, I never connected that. Well, you just beat me to my next one, which was, what's the difference between classical music and modern music today? But wow, the connection between the German
composers. Bach is nothing but Phi City. All of those classical composers are into this sound healing. I mean, I think Beethoven's teacher was the grand poobah of the Order of Science, you know, in Dan Brown's Da Vinci Code.
Yes.
They talk about the, you know, those different societies of ancient knowledge. Well, that would have been, let's see, I think it was Debussy. Was it Debussy? He was the grand poobah.
One of my favorites.
And Beethoven's teacher, the magic flute, talks about it. Bach is using these ancient codes. I don't think there's a classical master that's not tied into this information. And it's like it was hidden for so long, and it's like, I don't know, like it flew out of a cannon.
And think about it. God, it's exactly what you said, where that all came about right at the beginning of the Renaissance.
Right. And then, as the Renaissance progressed, this is very important. The equal temperament scale started to be introduced because prior to this time, all music was controlled by the government because they knew how powerful it was. And they used it to maintain peace in their people and, of course, control them and have certain virtues or values. Notice the Chinese have a stereotypical personality and stereotypical music. Every society does. And there's no accident to that. No, like in ancient China, you're not allowed to listen to anything different. So they're always controlled, but it was at the Renaissance where it opened up. And when that happened, then singers wanted to be able to sing in their range, so people had to transpose these keys. Now, Mother Nature, in her music, in her scales, in her sounds, it's not mathematical easily. Everything's a spiral. Nothing's a circle. And it's very expensive to play in Mother Nature's keys because you need a piano for every key.
Interesting.
Because it's slightly different. And so all of Mother Nature was chucked. And we have our scale today, which disconnects us from Earth. And what happens as soon as we do this? The Industrial Revolution, and we plunder Earth.
Oh, my God, that is wild. Now, does this fit in with the 432 hertz versus the 440 hertz?
Yes, and to me, that's like a little drop of the bigger picture. If you look throughout the ages, the tonal pitches have been rising as each great civilization has learned its lessons. So like, and I believe that as you go back further in time, you're going to get lower in pitch for your tuning notes.
Whoa.
And there's patterns across time.
God, it really, you're really showing me how everything is so interconnected. I had no idea.
Yes, and it's one big song.
Wow. I am floored. I am so floored.
And here's another cool thing, speaking of universe and song. If you take a human voice and you raise it three octaves, make it three times faster, I think. No, it's raise it three octaves. You'll get cricket sounds. And you can go on YouTube right now and look for cricket sounds and choir sounds.
I've heard
and
it. It's beautiful.
Where you take a cricket sound and you turn it down three octaves, and you can hear the human, these beautiful angelic humans in it.
It's
incredible. So, but that's a piece of the pie. That's a piece of it. The bigger piece is, secret is, if you do it five times, higher in pitch, you will create bird sounds from the human voice.
Wow!
And seven times you'll create dolphins.
Oh,
if you take it up nine octaves, from the human voice, you get whales. If you take it, now you're going to like this one. This one's for you. If you take the human voice up 11 octaves, you get star sounds.
Oh, my God.
So it's universe. Wonders,
that is so
wonders.
Cool!
Yes, it is.
I'm kind of shocked because I grew up in such a musical family and I didn't know this, but you know.
Well, it's not part of any music history. You don't go to school and learn about this. You don't go to college and learn about this. it's not out there.
It just puts you in awe. You just go back into that state of awe of how magnificent the world is. You know, when it's, oh my gosh, that's just, so tell me something. Define to me disharmony through the eyes of a sound healer, you know, and through someone who knows sound the way you do.
Well, I believe that we're wired to like certain patterns. For example, if you look at phi, there's phi and there's different proportions of the Fibonacci numbers in our bodies. And if you were to take women's faces or men's faces and the ones that line up perfectly to phi, everybody's going to say they're beautiful. If they don't, they're going to say they're not good looking or disharmonious. And the same thing would be in your body. It's like a sound that you make in your voice ricochets off your skull in the different parts of your brain and comes back in. Certain different bounces are going to create phi. You know, so it's like phi's within, phi's without. And we're hardwired to like certain sounds, like the musical interval of a fifth, which is simply one note, five notes away, real easy peasy stuff. We listen to it and we all go, ah. And we're just hardwired to like that. So in why Mother Nature uses these patterns, I guess I don't know. But I would define harmony as patterns that make us calm, relaxed, happy, open, and easy to go with the flow.
Wow. So do you feel that sound healing is different than vibrational healing, or is it just one of the same? Do you consider them the same?
Sound healing is, in my opinion, is the most powerful modality of the vibrational healing. And the reason is science. Science, sound is not better than any other modality. No, no, no. It's stronger. And the reason why any vibrational healing works, why food happens to be nutritious or any type of healing thing, is that energy transfers. And again, you can see how the whole world works off of the looking glass of sound. So you can see that energy transfers between the same note. If you have two violins and a G string, should have used another string anyway, a G string here and a G string there, and energy transfers. Like if I play one violin, the other violin's going to go off. And think of like an invisible gerbil tunnel with sound from the same vibratory essence to the other. And that's how healing works. It's also how illness works. But anyway, so when you have the same note, energy transfers. When you have an octave, which is simply means the same note, just higher, like bum, bum, same note, but it's a higher version of that note. That's an octave. When you have an octave, energy also transfers, but a little less. And if you have, like, let's say, you know, 100 octaves, you have maybe a lot less. So the reason why sound's powerful, it is the same pitch as everything in your physical body, your thoughts, and your feelings. So the resonance is the greatest.
Wow. Well,
it's
so
transferred.
I was reading through your book the other day, and I was called Secret Sounds Ultimate Healing, by the way. And I was fascinated. Can you tell the audience a little bit about how sound frequencies are transported through the body? I was
sure.
Shocked at how many different ways it's carried through the body.
Sure. First of all, you ingest sounds. It's like you eat sounds every bit as much as you eat food. For example, how does your body know when you're eating a Twinkie versus broccoli? It counts the cycles per second, for one, meaning the math would be the language of the body. But when you actually eat food, you're actually eating a sound that it's too small for you to hear as it vibrates. And so you can hear sound through, like, your ears. That's like the big internet, the central nervous system. It's the powerhouse. It even digitalizes sound so that it can be like a massive internet of sound vibrations through the body to the far reaches. Sound goes through cell-to-cell transfer, like on your skin, or, you know, on the layers right underneath your skin. Sound goes through cell-to-cell transfer on the tissues surrounding your nerves. So that would be like a comparator to analog, whereas the central nervous system would be comparable to digital. And the work of physicist Robert Becker says that the most impactful frequencies are those that go cell-to-cell transfer, and you ingest sound in your skin. That's why when you hug somebody, you open up your arms, because you have more intake sound sensors on your chest than, let's say, you do on your back.
Fascinating.
Anyway.
Oh, my God.
Yes. So, because when you open up, you're being more vulnerable. You're more willing to share those little vibrations simply by spreading your arms to hug the other person. So anyway, you can take it in all these different ways, but the work of Robert Becker suggests that the ones that affect your consciousness would be little tiny subtle sounds like geomagnetic sounds, the sound of the Earth in orbit, the little sounds coming in that are below our hearing range from the stars, which I put in my Stardust CD, because the ancients would tune to those heavens, and it was beautiful, beautiful enlightening process, and I did that in my Stardust CD. But, you know, like you can even look at the, you could buy off a motor, I'm sorry, I get so excited. You could buy off a Motorola, like the frequencies coming in from their satellite on the day. And so let's say if a frequency come in that's comparable to the frequency of niacin, then anybody has a cold gets better that day. So you absorb these little tiny sounds. And that's why in my CDs, the Healing Matrix, they're all audible, but I put them in little teeny, weeny, weeny sounds.
Nice.
Singing forks, actually.
So now, is there actually a correlation between a sound wave and a brain wave?
Yes, absolutely. Again, energy transfers between all waves. I like to think of a brain wave as a wave, an octave of sound. And I think scientists are going to know so much more about that brainwave as soon as they quit putting it on a line and going delta, theta, da, 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 and they put it on a spiral, in a circle.
Wow.
Then you can understand the relationships. Because one of the things that you can see when you think like this, you can take all these realms and just start interposing. For example, on a color wheel, you have your complementary colors across the chart. When you look at the math underneath, you will see that red and green are complementary colors, but red and green cancel each other out. An octave of red might be the big toe you broke. And so it's way out of balance. You got way too much red. You got way too much of this vibration. And you can start to heal it with the complementary color or a frequency that's comparable to green. So if you would start to look at your brain waves on a circle, you would begin to be able to have a much more impactful method of controlling your thinking by understanding the math underneath the waves.
You know, you said something really, really important here, and that is looking at it through the perspective of a spiral instead of a flat line. And even Nassim Harriman has taken the whole physics perspective in the exact same way, where you look at the solar system through the eyes of a spiral.
Yes.
And it's completely blown open the whole field, you know. So we're really coming back to the Fibonacci. Now, how you talked a little bit about, 5, 7, 9, 11, and like 11, I believe you said, was the stars, and 9 was the whales, and 7 was, which one's 7? So is there like a signature frequency? Obviously, there's one for each animal or insect or whatever. So is the signature frequency of, say, a snail, you know, is it radically different than a butterfly? I mean, how does that work?
I haven't actually done the specific research on the smaller ones, but I would think that one of the things I've learned is that there are cycles within cycles within cycles Or said differently, there's sounds within sounds within sounds. Or said differently, this is the time of the age of violet. We're all learning lessons in violet. There's a lot of people that have the violet ray, but every little person has still got a different set of frequencies. Yet we have a lot of bigger commonalities. So I would think different subgroups have perhaps maybe the same fundamental frequencies, but they might have more individualized subset of frequencies, and that might account for, let's say, you know, a fly versus an ant, perhaps. If that, am I making myself clear?
Yeah, yeah. And so basically, the more frequencies that you accumulate, which would almost be equivalent to experience, right? The higher your frequency goes.
Mm-hmm. It could. It could go the other way, too.
That's true. That's true. I tend to be a lot like you, where I look at everything as a glass half full. So now, how about this? What do you feel is happening on a quantum level when someone is moved to tears when they listen to music?
I think it's beautiful right off the bat. One of the most powerful ways for healing the human is through the octave or the range of frequencies we call feelings. And there's a science behind it. And what I've learned is that each one of your virtues, patience, courage, freedom, purity, is a frequency. It's a sound. In other words, if you were to take the same sounds of emotions, remember there's transfer between octaves and notes. So let's say that the note of C, the musical note of C, is an octave of the color red. It's an octave of confidence, insecurity. It's self-starting. It's got a certain set of emotions that exchange energy with that color, that frequency, that note. And so then you can basically learn to master the whole emotional thing by simply learning to balance to, listen to, harmonize with all the notes. And one thing I found is that each particular frequency has a positive and a negative manifestation. And I'll give you an example in real life, but also in my personal life. I was doing these healing flower symphonies in which I had gotten the frequency of 12 virtues. And that was kind of boring to listen to. So I put, being a musician, of course, I put music that matched the virtue. So if we have one on courage, the music sounds like courage. And I was so excited, you know, here I am healing the world, wahoo. And I was practicing these out at a nursing home, and this is very humbling,
that's
where
awesome.
My audience was only my audience because they were waiting to get in the lunchroom. And they didn't have anything to do, so they would come early and sit. And I'd play live violin music,
nice.
Which can really be whiny, piney. And they would like, you know, I was going to get hit with cane if I ever played anything happy. You know, they wanted stuff from when they were kids and really sad stuff to make you want to cry. And so, you know, these were high functioning, so they weren't heavy on drugs.
Right.
No one talked in 6 months. No one said hello to me. No one said hello to anybody. You know, it's like everybody comes in and acts like a statue or something. And then the doors open and everybody leaves. So we played cry your heart out stuff for 6 months. And then they started talking to me. I thought, well, maybe my budding, warming personality finally warmed them up. But maybe.
I'm hoping so.
Well, actually, I don't think it did. I think what happened, because in 9 months, everybody was talking to everybody else.
Wow.
It was like a total transformation. And it dawned on me, it was the sad music. And it's like this. Whenever I do this all the time, I say, oh, I'm such a good person. That didn't bother me. And I'm just lying to myself because I want to be a good person. And I have this little package of pain, and it's a vibration, and it's energy. I can't see it, but it's stuck on me someplace. And it's just sitting there. And these older people throughout their lives, I mean, they're just packed full of junk.
Yeah.
And they were so full of pain, they couldn't talk.
Right. Right.
And when you released it, when you cried, when that music made them get in touch with the pain, they didn't have to think about, oh, that rotten Frank, he did this, this, and this. They could skip all the specifics, skip the judgment, feel the sorrow, feel the loneliness,
and release it.
And let it go.
Yeah, and release it.
And so then I went back to my flowers and I put in a cathartic release. And I always say they're not for pansies because you do release, but you feel your sorrow on the way out. That's why sad people want to listen to sad music and mine and feel sorry for themselves, because it's a subconscious way of taking out the garbage. And the thing is that the pain, when you release horrible emotions, will not kill you. You know, give it its light, give it its day, and you get rid of it. If you're afraid of feeling it on the way out, man, you get to keep all the crap.
Yeah. And isn't that the number one key to almost all healing, which is got to be willing to release it, you know,
yeah.
instead of hanging
yeah.
on to it, you know, which leads me to my next question, which is, at what point does the frequency get blocked from delivering its signature into the body? You know, where do you find that?
Okay. Well, I wouldn't say so much that a frequency blocks, but it's harmony. It's like if you look at red and green, and I'm just taking them because they're a complementary color. Think of them as a seesaw. You know, when you got too much red, you have too little green. When you have too much green, you have too little red. And I'm going to say the same thing differently. When your body, and you look at the frequency of everything, has too much of the note C, too many things are vibrating C, then you're not going to have enough of F, because that would be the musical note of the complementary color. And if you're healthy, you're going to have a little bit of each. Think of ascension as white light, and that's nothing but all the rainbow colors. And when you start to yank out the rainbow colors, you start to get out of balance, and that can create illness. And so it's like you're in, oh God, sometimes the universe is just so wonderful. Whenever you are around something that you need frequency-wise for health, mental, emotional, physical, whether it be a person, whether it be a tree, a flower, a fragrance, a food, or your favorite CD, your body releases endorphins. So let's say you got a CD here, and it's frequencies, and your body says, hey, gimme, gimme, gimme. So you play it over and over and over again, and you ingest it, and you listen to it for 3 months, and then all of a sudden you're sick of it. What's happened is you've taken all that you need. You've now got that seesaw balanced. And if you continue to listen to more, you're now going to get out of balance. That's why you don't like it anymore.
Right, right. I can totally relate to that with the essences that I create. It's the same sort of concept. You know, I wanted
sure.
to ask you, in reading your book, one of the things that really popped out for me is I had a very good friend who was just a master nutritionist, and she had kind of exposed me to the core issue within the body they have now found scientifically is the vagus nerve. And they mm-hmm. have determined that the vagus nerve is probably the number one core dysfunctioning ingredient for things like leaky gut, not being able to digest your food properly, you know, things like that. And so I noticed mm-hmm. on one part of your chapter, it talks about the parasympathetic nervous system regulated mm-hmm. by the vagus nerves. I was just fascinated that the vocal cords lie within that bundle. So is it essentially everything really gets down to the vagus nerve as far as reading the signature or the imprint or the vibration itself?
Well, that's one way. The body has many ways to import signals, and that's an incredibly important way to import signals. And let me say this, that your voice, it's not just the sound. It's all of you. Your voice contains your digestion, your liver, the toe you stubbed, the fight you had yesterday, the perfume you're wearing, the essence you just used. All that stuff is going to be reflected in your voice because it's a vibration. And your body takes every vibration, averages it, and it is your voice. And just as a crystal can take beautiful sunlight and display a great rainbow from it, you can get software online, nanovoice.org. It's free. And you can take your voice and break it into component pitches. And when you do that, you can see, well, you have to probably be a little educated, but you can see, your digestion, any disease you have, your thinking patterns, your feeling patterns. And with study and work with Sherry Edwards has these courses, you can look at, like, what's the root cause. Think of everything in your body like a domino. You could just be walking along and all of a sudden fall and break your leg, but actually perhaps it wasn't physical. Perhaps you were having an emotional problem that weakened a certain muscle.
Right.
And so you might think it's physical, but the root cause is emotional. And so you can look in your voice and see the root causes and how obscure things affect each other vibrationally. And so your voice is all that is, as far as you are. And the vagus nerve runs right through your vocal cords, taking everything in your voice out to your body. Now, there's other ways. Like, I think there's a feedback loop, and this is from, the work of Sherry Edwards. She was born with extraordinary hearing. Like, she could hear your disease or neurotransmitters smaller volumes than you would hear. So what she does is she could hear frequencies coming out of people's ears. Today, they use this in modern hospitals. There are frequencies coming out of people's ears, and they can use that to diagnose babies and comatose people who can't speak their symptoms. So it's already verified. But at any rate, it's like a feedback loop. You cut your foot, and all of a sudden, instantly, your body's repairing it. Well, how's that happen? Before the signal had time to go up to your brain and back down, your body's already fixing stuff. Because as soon as you cut that toe, your frequency goes off. Your body picks it up like radio antennas. And then the signal comes out of your ear, cutting the toe, and instantly your body goes and repairs. I like things simple so I can understand it. I always like kind of imagine like radio antennas sticking out of my ears and they're broadcasting. So there's many ways that frequencies go through your body.
You know, I had an experience, Jill, with a practitioner who did bioresonance feedback, and they used this similar type of concept where you spoke into a recording and it was played back to you through a transducer. I couldn't get over. I mean, like, I would say very quickly there were major emotional, mental, very old things, like, that you weren't even conscientious of that were already being healed. It was it was fascinating. So I know the voice is a very, 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 you know, significant way of healing.
The work of David Oakes, I think he's an Aussie. Anyway, he was in the 80s or something. He had a tape deck in his car, and it was broken. And he was driving, and he was lazy and didn't, you know, the tape was playing backwards. And he found there was all kinds of messages. And hence he spent his whole life reversing your voice, his whole life. And he's got all kinds of books on it. And not just that tape, all of us, when we reverse our voices at certain speeds, we have messages. And I wonder with Jesus, when he talks about speaking with a forked tongue, you know, when you lie, so you have the true voice out on the voice we think of, but if you reverse it, you have the truth, kind of speaking like with a forked tongue. creating dissonance
And I've
in your
heard that
voice.
before. Is the guy's name David Oak?
Yes. And then it gives meaning to the true self, sets you free, because then you would have harmony.
Fascinating. God, I'm going to have to check him out. Now, getting back to something you said before, you brought up the analog versus the digital. Is one
mm-hmm.
better than the other for the body?
I would say they're both vitally important. The digital, it's like our internet. It takes high volumes of information and gets at lightning speed throughout your body. That's very important. But it's like if you take a photograph and you know, if you think you have a really cheap camera and it doesn't have many pixels, you can see that the picture is kind of grainy and lumpy. Whereas if you were to use film, you could see how much finer detail and how much higher quality it is. And so the higher quality, with all the little detail, is the same as analog sound. See, analog sound has every pitch, and every pitch has a harmonic, and it's all accurate and perfect. Whereas digital or a digital camera, and you can see it in a cheap one, has a certain amount of distortion. So I would say that they're both important for different purposes. Again, back to the work of physicist Robert Becker, he wrote books like Cross Current and so forth. Mm-hmm. Again, he was showing the horrible things that happen from cell phones and electric wires and different, again, frequencies out of our hearing range, but that maim and distort us. But he was showing that it's the analog, the little tiny frequencies that he believes create our consciousness.
Interesting. And I remember somebody telling me a long time ago that when we switched over to digital recordings in the studio, like all the music that's being released today is digitally recorded, this particular person told me that, you know, it's not as rich. It's not as beneficial for the body. It's almost discordant for the body, and that's one of the reasons that it was done. Do you have any ideas on that?
I don't know if that was the reason it was done. I would think, at least on the surface, it appears that money tends to do all these changes where we get further and further away from nature, from God. It's unnatural, is what it is. And is analog better? Oh my gosh, yes. Is a live concert? Woo, woo, yes. Much
true,
better.
True, very true.
Mm-hmm.
Now, tell me a little bit about Silvestro frequencies. I use them a lot, but just for the audience, can you tell everybody a little bit about that and why they are so significant in today's world?
Okay. There's a lot to that question.
Yes, there is.
The Solfeggio tones, at least I first found them in ancient Egypt. They were using them then. And, you know, Moses of the Hebrew Bible was raised as a Pharaoh's son and would have access to the Egyptian information. Six of the 18 Solfeggio tones have been found encoded in numbers in the old Hebrew Bible. Then they surface again, and they were used for healing. They were used for the priesthood to elevate their disciples to, again, the mind, body, soul, to make them more spiritual, more psychic, to make them more harmonic, to make them have better health. When you have like a whole matrix pattern, it's kind of a consciousness, mind, body, it like helps on all levels. So the Hebrews used them, the Egyptians used them. They surface again with the Catholic Church in the Dark Ages, as we previously had said, that they had outlawed Phi. Now, one of the most extraordinary things about the Solfeggio tones is that they're Phi-less. Mm-hmm. They're perfectly avoiding all Phi's. And the way I look at that is that the soul, if you were to compare tones to shapes, and well, I know, here's how we'll do it. We're going to pretend you have a sound etch-a-sketch. I love toys. Okay, so the right knob makes a straight line, and the left knob makes a curve. But only instead of the etch-a-sketch with curved lines and straight lines, we're going to have sounds. So the right knob is going to be your solfeggio. Your left knob is going to be phi. And between the two of them, you can draw anything. So I think they're both highly valuable. The other thing really quite extraordinary about this rich matrix is that when you use gematria, which is an ancient art of converting everything to numbers for the purpose of analyzing waves and vibrations and comparing them through different dimensions or perspectives. In other words, comparing sounds to shapes, to trees, to leaves. You know, reduce everything down to numbers and consider that number an energy and then transfer it through different ways of looking at the world. Like music is easily numbers. You can use geometry to look at a leaf and analyze its shape. So they had numbers being the universal language of everything. And they had these little systems. They had numerous ways in which they would transpose numbers into prime numbers and letters into numbers. And it was like it's like a way of doing resonance between these different entities, writing versus sound. And so when you apply this to the solfeggio tones, you find that they are a matrix of the numbers 3, 6, and 9. And there's 18 of these. Now, Tesla, the same scientist who mysteriously was to have demonstrated extraordinary powers of energy, and also the same science of Kepler, and again, who had extraordinary inventions, and they hid it because they felt mankind wasn't ready. But both of them say, the secret to energy, the secret to the universe, the power of the universe, it's nothing but a 3, 6, 9 matrix. And both of them refer to it to the sounds of 3, 6, and 9. So I just found that was a little fascinating intrigue with solfeggio.
Yes. I knew about that. My husband does. He works with that kind of stuff. Jill, I have a gazillion more questions for you, but I'm realizing we're already at the end of the hour, and we can always try and carry this on to another time segment, but I wanted everybody to please check out her website at jillswingsofflight.com. Weavesoflight.com, excuse me, and also paintyoursoul.com. She is a phenomenal artist. I mean, I was just really impressed with your artwork as well.
And free MP3 healings for the flower healings, for the star healings, solfeggio, Fibonacci, star tunings, and element on the homepage of Jill's Wings of Light.
Yes, and she has offered that. And for every person that purchases a CD from her, she will donate $1 to Galactic Connection. So please support her.
And yes. And my email is July Mattson. So if you can't make a comment that you made this purchase through this radio show, then just shoot me an email and let me know so I can properly donate. It's July Mattson, MATTSON, at yahoo.com.
Okay. Well, thanks everybody for staying tuned to a phenomenal, the dissertation on sound healing from you, Jill, is really impressive. I learned so much today. I'm very impressed. So thank you again. Thank you again for coming, and
okay,
we will see what
good.
We can do next segment.
Okay.
Okay. Take care.